Hello?
Good morning.
Morning, how are you?
I'm doing okay. How are
Good.
you?
I'm fine, but my friend Aaron Bell is arguing with me on Twitter as to which DC Rebirth title I think is the worst.
What do you think is the worst?
So, historically, since it started, Supergirl. However, I really liked the last issue.
I could buy into that. Yeah, Supergirl. The other Supergirl's much better.
Oh, that was a fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. But yeah, I mean, it's just an opinion. So how can you argue with me about what I think was the worst?
Yeah, you know what opinions are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone has one.
It doesn't matter. It's information you need to absorb by
Yeah.
reading it and absorbing it yourself. Because everybody
Exactly.
has a different perspective of things.
Sure.
I'm sure Supergirl's really clicking with somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just read the last one, New Superman was in it. It's very good. But
Yeah.
overall, I don't think it's been very strong.
Let me call Chris. He said he's ready.
Oh, okay.
All right. Yeah, for me, it's. What's really clicking with me now is the X-Men. Holy crap, that was
Yeah, I
good.
saw
Holy crap. I'm just loving it.
that.
The art is very consistent too. Like it's consistently good in both books, I think.
Yeah, I think that the art's been pretty good. I started out liking Gold better because it's kind of got my team, the team that I always liked. But I think
Yeah.
Cullen Bunn is just doing a terrific job writing that the Blue Book. So that's actually starting to turn
Well,
into
it's
my
real.
favorite
It's
of the
a
two.
really weird book, but it's written so well. But he's like tapping into like various things. Do you know what I mean? In history and stuff, and it's like making it really interesting. And then the Jean Grey book is like freaking awesome.
I saw you post about that, and I have to say that I hadn't picked that up at
But
all, so
you know what you should
I
do?
missed it.
You don't have to miss these things, okay? Spend your $6.99 a month and get Marvel Unlimited. No, you will discover stuff, and then you could go back and buy your paper copies because there's stuff that you could be missing out on. And
Well, no, I mean,
it
it's
like
not a.
offers a lot. Like you just read like I don't know, I read like more than a dozen books off of there a month, and it's
You've been
well
reading a
worth it.
lot.
Yeah.
It's not a bad idea because I don't know if you saw. I think you probably saw because I think I was talking. I tweeted at you about it. The new Avengers event because I dropped Avengers proper a while back,
Yeah.
and I'm like, I just don't want to go back just for a weekly event. But that's something that I could then read after the fact, like 6 months down the road or
Right.
whatever.
And it does it's pretty cool in the fact that like let's say if you want to cover a book, a lot of the books that like you want to pick are on there, like you could pick for this
Yeah.
podcast.
Oh,
And then
that's true too.
and then you don't have you could try something new and then if you like I just started The Amazing Adventures, which is the Inhuman stuff. Oh my God, is it good?
Oh, yeah.
It's got the Black Widow backup,
That's
and
the one that turns into the beast down the road, or?
yeah, the one that you. A matter of fact, I was. Chris, are you there?
Yep.
Okay,
Hi,
just making
Chris.
sure. Good morning.
Hi.
I was asking about what you paid because I wanna buy that book, but it's man, it's pretty high. I mean, for like a VG book. Like if you got it for 40, that's spectacular. But
Yeah, it was between 40 and 50, but I think he originally had it priced, oh God, I want to say 60 or 70. And he took another look at it and noticed a couple of defects that he didn't
yeah.
notice. And then he dropped it, but then he gave me a deal on top of that. So yeah, he really took care of me.
Yeah, but like I just said it's pretty cool, like to just randomly pick up something and read it. Like, and I read like in the early morning or late night on my iPad. Other than that, I read on paper. But like, I'll just randomly pick something like Power Pack or something like that I haven't read before, and then I'm like, oh man, I like this, you know? And like,
Yeah.
I went and made a MyComicShop.com purchase so I could get Amazing Adventures number one. Because I was missing it, and I had number two, but yeah, I added it to my list, and that's how like it it's getting me to buy stuff that I haven't ha I don't have. But it's really cool. The app itself is really good. I like it's probably one of the best purchases I've done in a long time.
I just have to make an announcement that Allie is dusting in the computer room here. Okay,
Okay.
she wanted me to let everyone know.
You're putting her to work early.
She's got the little dust, whatever you call it, little like
Yeah.
Swiffer thing, and
Yeah.
she's dusting. Yeah, she's doing a great
Just hit
work.
the mute button if she gets the vacuum out.
I will.
Yeah.
Don't put us on speaker.
No, I know, right?
Because
But yeah,
we
so
might say a bad word, especially Mike.
yeah.
Mike doesn't use bad words.
I do when I get emotional.
He'll say it's so fucking good.
Yes. Are you
So how are you
reading
guys?
that Mojo stuff? It's awesome.
I think I've only read part one though. I think I'm almost to part two, because I'm reading the W's today.
Oh, God.
So I'm almost up to X. What do you think of that, Mike?
I don't know how you do that. But it works, whatever
It's fine.
works.
It works
It
great.
works for you. It couldn't
Yeah.
work for me.
No?
No, not at all.
I think it would work okay.
No, it wouldn't. I'm telling you right now, it wouldn't.
Oh.
I have to read what I want to read when I
Yeah.
want to read it.
I can understand that.
Well, this is our Halloween spectacular.
Yes.
And we each chose four or three similar slasher movies.
Yeah, without knowing that that's what we're all gonna pick,
And
right?
the interesting thing for me is I haven't seen any of them.
I
I
haven't
have
either.
seen the remakes of Prom Night, and I've seen the remakes of The Slumber Party Massacre, but I haven't seen the originals.
You didn't pick Slumber Party Massacre.
Oh, that's right. That
The
was in
House
my
on
queue.
Sorority
House
Row.
on Sorority Row. What's the difference?
But yeah, I guess, well, the remake of Prom Night is pretty much in title only, as far as I understand. I haven't seen the remake, but I've read that it's not really a remake so much as they
Well,
just
no,
took the title.
it's a prom night, but it doesn't have that legacy thing going. Like, if I
Well, I'm
remember
sure, yeah,
correctly,
it's
it doesn't have
still going to
that
be a prom night.
the kid thing, which is a big part of that movie.
You know what's funny is that as I was watching Prom Night, and actually, Mike, I take that back. I had seen the one that you picked, The House on Sorority Row, but I used to just pick a movie late at night on my tablet, and I'd start
Yeah.
falling in and out of sleep. So that was one of them. So I knew I had watched the beginning, but I never watched the whole way through because I'd fallen asleep.
Yeah.
And but it's anyhow, it's funny because those two are very similar in terms of even like how like what's going on and the kind of who the killer is type of thing, because it's kind
Similar,
of somebody
but
getting a
different.
revenge.
The thing that bothered me with Prom Night, and it is because of the ages, man. God, I don't know if you noticed, but they show the kids when they're little, okay? And then it says, if you pay attention, it says 6 years later. How the hell did they get from that age to that age and then look like Jamie Lee Curtis in high
Well,
school? She
that's the
must
thing.
had to be like 26 or 27.
Sure. They were
All
supposed to be
of
like
those
11,
actors had to be.
and then
Okay,
they were supposed to be like 17, but.
hang on. They were like 10 or 11
Right. And then it's 6 years
when,
later.
and it's 6 years later, so it's their high school age, but
Did
Jamie Lee
they? Oh,
Curtis's
wait,
character
let's.
was
Did they
also
look 10 or
older than the
11?
kids that were involved in the beginning. She wasn't one of the kids, and she was older by a year or two. So I mean,
So
of
let's.
course, like she's still, that's typical for
To
that the
me,
actors would still be older, but
they
I
all
mean,
look
it's typical.
six or seven. They, you know.
No, they're old. But I can tell you from having two that are almost five, they're definitely like 10 or 11. They're like twice as big as these kids are that are running around my house. But
back up a second. Let's take at least a slightly organized approach to this.
Yeah, so, I was just gonna say. Yeah.
If we want to start with prom night.
Yeah, let's start with prom night. Why don't you give a synopsis of it, because that's your choice, Rob.
So
chronological order, I guess.
Basically, what we've got here is, and are we going to go spoilers or are we not going to go
spoilers?
Yeah,
this is
spoilers.
This is old stuff.
Are you sure this movie came out only, what, 37 years ago?
Well, let's start with some of that. Like, it came out in
1980, stars Jamie Lee Curtis,
mm-hmm.
right?
This was kind of right after Halloween.
Yeah, like maybe 2 or 3 years after Halloween. Mm-hmm. And how it starts off is it's got a bunch of kids playing some sort of very strange game that I don't remember playing as a kid, which is called The Killer is Coming. And basically, I think it's like hide and seek. But then two kids that I think were twins approach the building. The boy decides to keep going. The girl goes in, and they all the other kids kind of start trying to tease that kid and scare her and stuff, and she falls out the window and ends up dying. So then we cut to 6 years later, and
I don't think they were twins, because they're not twins when they're older.
Oh, they weren't twins?
They were not twins. They were just wearing the same sweaters.
Not related or anything.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because, I mean, later on when they're adults, I don't
think
they
the one is
look
dead.
Like each other. Oh, you mean the one is a twin to the one that got died? I don't know, maybe.
The girl. Because you're right, Kim was older.
They were dressed alike, though. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I thought those two were
twins.
When
they were walking together, the older girl was walking with them or came by them, and then it was the two twins with wearing the same sweater. So it could be they were twins.
I think those two were twins, and Jamie Lee Curtis's character, as you said, Chris, was older than those two kids. But it doesn't
because not to jump ahead, but you don't know that until the end of the film that Jamie Lee Curtis's younger brother is even present at in the beginning of the movie.
I don't remember.
I thought they had him at the beginning of the movie when Leslie Nielsen was with his two kids.
Yeah.
When they were grown up.
He shows up then, yeah. But he's not, her brother is not one of the ones that's playing hide and seek.
Oh, no.
No.
See, this is at the very beginning, and we're kind of nitpicking this beginning, but at the very beginning we have Kim is older. She like goes by them or whatever, goes by those two kids. Oh, here are their names, Alex and Robin. And they walk by and see the kids playing. Kim and Alex leave, but Robin ends up going into the building.
Right.
So what I'm saying is that Robin and Alex were twins. Kim was Jamie Lee Curtis's character. Robin's the one that dies, and so Alex was at the beginning there. He had left with
his
grown up sister, and so then like 6 years later, it's prom season and so forth. And I'm actually trying to think back and remember.
So there's three girls, one boy, that are playing the hide and seek, and then Robin goes in and plays with them, and the ones that are already playing are the ones that tease her, and she backs up and falls out the window. And then the four of them that were playing, the three girls and one boy, they make a pact to say, we're not gonna tell anyone.
I'm never gonna
say anything we were involved in this accidental death.
It was a really big form of bullying to me. It wasn't it wasn't really like a game like hide and seek. It got violent. It was bullying. They like cornered her and they sort of forced her off the window.
Yeah. Yeah. And they ended up, the authorities end up thinking that this crazy person that had escaped from a mental hospital was actually the one that killed Robin. And then they ended up trying to get him, and he ended up like wrecking his car and stuff like that. And they
lead you to believe it's that janitor there for a little bit.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That poor guy is just working.
Yeah, there's several. It's kind of like typical slasher movie. There's several misdirects, and it's obvious enough that if like you've seen enough of these movies, you know that it's not going to be one of those ones that they try to make you think, you know. But the one, yeah, he's actually a rapist that escaped, and they think he's blamed for it. And then in 1980, when the film takes place, he escapes,
right? Yeah.
So that it takes a while before they resolve that. There's the lead up to prom, and throughout that time period in the background, things start to escalate with someone making obscene phone calls and
saying that they're, you know, he's coming for them and so on and so forth.
In the meantime, they're still looking for the escaped rapist, and they're also, like Mike said, making the janitor seem suspicious.
Right. Right. So, I
have another question. There's a scene in the cafeteria where Jamie Lee Curtis is getting picked on by the guy with black hair that's always smoking.
Oh yeah.
And he has like a mask. Who comes to her defense? Is that the boyfriend or the brother?
That was the brother.
The brother. Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah. That brings up a comment that I had, though, that made things a little confusing at times, is that the brother... So, Jamie Lee Curtis, her character's name is Kim. Kim is dating Nick, who was the boy that was involved in the death at the beginning of the film.
Right.
And Nick kind of looks like her brother, Alex.
There's moments where it's confusing. Yeah,
it is. But that's right. And then I thought that character, what's his name? The guy in the van?
Slick, he called
him. Yeah.
That guy was interesting.
He was very. That was very funny. No,
it's so not typical though, because he was not a studly guy.
No, he was not.
He was like a geek stoner in a van. Like,
yeah.
And he got the girl, which is really weird and not typical of these type of movies.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he.
Good for him.
He picked her up on the way to school one day. And then what was her name?
And it was legit too. Like he really took her to school. Like you kind of said, well, is this guy gonna take off with her or something like that?
That's what I was wondering.
He really
too,
took her to school and formed a relationship with her. And they, of all the couples, they seemed to get along pretty good.
Yeah. Her name was Jude. I'm looking.
Jude. Yeah. She was the one that. So Jude is one of the three girls that was involved in the death, and Jude is the one that doesn't have a date for the prom yet, and so she actually ends up being glad that Slick asked her and excited.
And the other two are Kelly and Wendy.
Yeah,
those are the other two girls that were involved in this.
There's issues with Wendy. If you want to get into that, she's the one that used to be Nick's girlfriend.
Oh yes, okay. I'm not remembering the names correctly.
Yeah, I liked how she uses that guy too. Like she tells Jamie Lee Curtis at one point, it's not who you go to the prom with, it's who you leave with. So it's like she's in this revenge story, and she's using this guy who's a real asshole with black hair to. At one scene, they're like dancing, and he's like really into it, and he does his like spin move, and he turns away from her, and he turns around, and then she's gone. She's totally using that guy.
Yeah, his name is Lou, and he's like the school rebel. He actually gets suspended indefinitely. Leslie Nielsen is the other big actor in this movie.
Yeah.
Which at this point actually is like pre-Naked Gun and stuff, so he was still like known as a serious actor. But he's the prince, also the school principal, and so he after we mentioned earlier that Kim's brother Alex comes to her defense when Lou is teasing her, and they get in a fight, and Leslie Nielsen suspends Lou indefinitely, and he's like, if you thought that I would give my son preferential treatment, you were right.
Yeah.
And so Lou's pissed off at that entire family, basically. So when Wendy, she comes on to him basically for the purpose of using him to set up, to bring him as to the prom as her date, to set up a plan to embarrass Nick and Kim at the prom, because they're going to be the king and queen of homecoming. Right. And she is still jealous because she wants to be back with Nick.
And did you mention that Leslie Nielsen's character is the father of Kim and Alex?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, I believe that it's still leading up to prom night when Kelly, what is she doing? I think she's in the, is she in the dressing room or something like that? And she ends up getting, oh, I think that she was making out with her boyfriend, right?
Yeah, and, but is he the one that leaves because she's
popping
out? Yeah,
he gets
out.
Pissed because she tells him to stop, so he leaves. And so as she's starting to get dressed, there's a figure. You don't really see who it is. And you see them putting on a ski mask and they come up and kills her by slitting her throat.
During the prom.
It is during the prom. I couldn't remember if it was just
The only thing that really happens before that, like you said, there was prank phone calls, and then some of the girls find yearbook photos in their lockers. They're torn up and stabbed with pieces of glass, and
the glass actually gets shattered when they're in the locker room too.
Right, right.
Yeah, and I think that's the mirror that they used to like put on their pictures.
Yep, yeah. and to slice that girl's Kelly's throat, I think.
Yeah, but Kelly's the first one of the three girls from the.
There is that other guy who escapes that. He does legitimately murder a girl, right? And then steals her Volkswagen Bug. Like, that's why the cops are after
him. Oh, right, yes.
The cops actually think that that's the killer.
Yes.
Because he's actually already committed murder.
And as he escaped, right?
Right.
Yeah, and during the prom, at some point, the police officer that's there, he gets a call that the escape rapist, he like was said earlier, his car blows up and with him in it. So at that point, the police officer, thinks that he can relax because everything's all good. They don't have to worry about who they think is responsible, but.
Right,
we know that that's not the case.
Exactly. And go ahead, Mike.
Well, there's one scene that bothers me, and you might be leading up to it, so I'll wait until it's the second murder in the van.
Yep, that's what I was just going to say.
And the reason that one bothers me is because. You think the killer is after a certain set of individuals, okay? Well, this guy Slick had nothing to do with that prank, or that hide and seek game.
Mm-hmm.
But yet he still went after him. And the other thing I want to point out in this movie, it's very different from the other movies, Is this the earliest one? I think it is, 1980. I think mine was
Yeah, I think so.
83. I don't think they had the timing right. Like, their kill scenes are very extended and not very like timely. Like they don't hit the right tempos. They're off. And you'll see in the as we get later on into the other films, as far as killing goes, they're a little more timely. Like they hit the beats at least a little faster.
It's funny how that you're saying that, because I didn't think of that, but yet I see what you mean. And I think when we get done discussing each one of these, we should kind of give it a grade, give it a rating, maybe a Netflix rating or something like you do for your comics, Mike. But this was, I'll just say, just generally, that this was my least favorite of the three movies. And it may have been the one that I had the most expectation for, just seeing Jamie Lee Curtis's name in there, and that Halloween had come before this, that I thought, okay, well, maybe this is one that actually has a star name that I've never seen. I think that's right, a lot of what you said about those, the timing and
Yeah,
stuff.
I actually blame the direction. It they didn't they
Oh yeah,
did
it
not
wasn't her. It
they
wasn't
did
her.
not
It was
hit the
just,
suspenseful murder beats.
no,
And
no.
usually they're paced a little bit. These were sort of awkward the way they were paced. Like
I think they were just too long.
they took way too long. And they were I don't know, compared to other films, a lot of it was off camera, which could be okay, but it just was weird for this type of movie. It was very strange. They did have a good mooning scene, though. I will point that out.
Well, so I'll go through the rest of these murders, and then we can kind of talk about the ending
Yeah,
and
when
give
you
it
get to the
a
next one,
grade.
I want to talk about the van one because
Okay, so
it is kind of cool. It's kind of
that's
cool,
actually
but
the one
not
that
cool.
comes next, because
Yeah.
it's cheap and slick, and they sneak out of the gym, and they start fooling around in the back of his van. And after and then they actually go out for a little bit, and they hear some noises, and they think that somebody's spying on them. They go back inside the van because they're feeling a little creeped out. But then, like literally, like after they go back in there, the doors to the van open up, and again, the guy in the ski mask, he ends up killing Jude, stabs her in the neck, and then Slick is like fighting and pushing and so on and so forth, and they're all, all three of them are in the van, and Jude's been killed, and the van starts moving, and then the killer jumps out, and the van goes over a cliff and explodes. So to your point, I mean, I think Slick was just a victim of circumstance, because he happened to be there with Jude when the killer decided that this was the time that, Jude was away from the gym. This was the time to try to kill her. And, Slick was there too. So that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean, he's a witness.
But the relationship is just so weird. It looks like they're having intercourse, and it doesn't look like there's a climax. But this guy just stops in the middle. He stops in the middle of what he's doing, and he says, "Man, I gotta go." And you don't know at the time. This chick is pretty cool because she doesn't get grossed out. Like you don't know at that time. You don't know if he's gotta take a dump or a pee or whatever. And he just goes out there, and the director decides to make this like a suspenseful scene, and it really doesn't work. The timing's off. The killing of this scene is like ridiculously long. First thing he goes out to pee, and then you have somebody watching him pee, and then she's in the vehicle herself, but she's still talking to him while he's peeing. And then they get back into the van, and then they decide to go out and have sex on this hill, and then they decide to go back into the van. And then you have this cool, once she gets killed, you have this cool scene in the van where his van, he tries to run over him, and it's like ridiculous. It's like his van keeps on getting stuck in the mud and he's like peeling out. And he's like hanging out the door, and then he gets in the van, and then he gets knocked out of the van, and then he's back in the van, and then he kills him. It's like crazy. It's one of the it's the campiest kill scene, I think, in the whole movie.
Yeah.
I thought the sequencing of it was good, and the way that she's leaning against the back doors of the van when they open.
That was good. It just lasted way too long. It
I think it
was
was the I think it was the lead up to it that was just that and there's other moments that just felt like padding to make the movie long enough.
Yeah.
It just went on too long. So I think that was more the problem than the actual like once the action actually starts.
Yeah, because how long was this movie? I'm trying to look it up right now.
I think it was an
oh, an
hour and
hour and
29
32 minutes. So
minutes.
it was, I mean,
32.
it wasn't long, but it was like they could have cut some of this stuff and it still would have been long enough. I think I remember just reading recently that in order for a movie to have a theatrical release, I think it has to be like just over 70 minutes or something like that. So, I mean, I think a lot of it is like, just the direction and like you were saying, is there's a lot of padding and just awkward moments.
Yeah. So anyways,
Well,
there's more that happens
Oh
after
yeah.
that, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, I
So
also want to point out though, like you were saying, this is your least favorite. This had a higher budget than my movie did. It had
and you know what?
had
You
a
can
budget of 20 million, which is a lot to me
That's
back then.
yeah.
And it
I
made
mean they can
57.2 million, which is a good run of money, but
It's not uncommon, even today, almost 40 years later, that you could do a horror movie for 20 million, even today. So 20 million back in 1980, that was a big budget
I'm
movie.
showing that it was only like a million and a half.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say 20 million, that's a huge amount for 1980.
Mine
Yeah.
says 20, so I don't know. Maybe that means like entirety.
You're looking at the remake. The remake was 20 million.
Oh, there we go. I
Oh,
looked
okay.
at the
Yeah.
remake.
See, that's what I mean is that
Because
nowadays
that
that's
was
what
a lot of
a horror
money.
movie is like 20 million. Like movies like Get Out and stuff like that are probably about 20 million.
Yeah, this is more
Yeah.
reasonable. 1.5, and then
Yeah, for
14 million.
1980.
Yeah,
But
14.
I mean, in terms of like how the movie looked, I don't even mean special effects necessarily, but you can tell it was a little bit more professionally made than maybe the other ones, but it just wasn't, I don't feel like it was as good of a movie.
I didn't pay attention to this, but when I watched it, this was in a square format.
I think so.
But the other ones I think were a little wider than this one.
I don't remember.
I don't know if it's just my TV settings or what, but
Yeah,
I thought that they were all widescreen, but I don't remember.
I'm
Yeah,
not.
mine looked like a
I didn't pay
box.
attention.
Like
Did it?
a like you were
Standard.
like you were walk yeah, watching it on like a standard TV back in the day.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I paid enough attention, or that I even
So,
heard.
at this point, just
So
to get
now
back
we
on
have who do
track,
we still have we still have Kelly still
Wendy.
alive, Nick still alive. Those are the two left from the
No,
from that.
Kelly's the one was the first one to die.
No, that was what that was that Kelly or was that Wendy?
It was
Oh, it was Kelly.
Kelly.
Right. Yeah,
Yeah.
you're right.
Wendy, the girl that's jealous
Yep, you're right.
of, and Nick, the boy that was involved in the accidental death.
Going out with Jamie
Are
Lee
the
Curtis.
two, yeah, are the two that are from the that made the pact to keep it a secret that are still around, and then Jamie Lee Curtis, of course,
Right.
star of the movie.
So at this point, the killer comes back into the school, and he's following Wendy out to the gym. She goes to to the bathroom. And I believe she's just like getting made up or something. And So the lights turn off. He starts attacking, and there's, if I remember correctly, like they start, he starts chasing her through the school.
Yeah, with an axe.
Very long chasing.
Yeah, say this was another big scene that went on a little too long.
Yeah, definitely too long. Then she ends up going and finds Kelly's body, because Kelly was the first one killed, right? And then that's where the killer catches up with her and kills her with the axe.
They have a real suspenseful scene where she goes into a car and locks the car, but this guy has an axe. So it's like, that doesn't stop him.
Yeah, it was kind of like a shop class or whatever area. Yeah. For automobile. Some schools have those where you can like learn to work on cars and stuff.
Right,
like,
yeah, one she of those was hiding things. In there. That was a great place to hide. Place that's totally enclosed with windows.
She put up most of the, probably the biggest fight though of the three girls.
Oh, for sure.
It went on too long, but it was just, she kept it together and kept quiet, but it was too much to find her friend's yep. body.
Yeah, exactly. And Chris, what happens next? Because I saw this like a couple weeks ago, and now I'm starting to forget.
That's okay. So, one thing that happened that we didn't talk about that was kind of funny is that this is like right on the cusp of the 80s. So you still had the disco a big thing. So there's a lot of disco music throughout the movie, and they had a Saturday Night Fever moment of Kim and Nick dancing as like kind of a show off thing to piss off Wendy. Because Wendy definitely is like trying to make her moves on Nick and trying to get him back and stuff, and so that's like their show off. Like,
there's a lot of dance scenes. A lot.
Yeah, original disco music, like Prom Night. Everything is all right. but yeah, this is kind of like the climax at this point where, they are trying to pull off the prank that was set up by Wendy. Even though she's dead at this point, Lou and a couple guys that he brought with him, they've been separated, and they don't really give a shit at this point where Wendy is anyways. They're going to follow through with this plan, which is basically to... the original plan was to tie up Nick and Wendy.
Yeah.
To prevent them from being the king and the queen, and then Lou and Wendy were going to come out. And right. Lou says, well, if they don't know where Wendy is, so they're like, well, if she doesn't show up, then I'll just be the king with Kim, which is even better in his opinion.
Right.
So they do...
They tie up Nick, right?
They do attack, yeah, Nick and tie him up. But as it turns out, they basically, by doing that, leave him vulnerable. Because the killer shows up and Lou is standing there with the crown on, waiting to go out. This was a good moment, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Where he comes up and decapitates him with the axe, and Lou's, his head goes rolling out onto the stage before anything else happens.
Right through the curtains, yeah.
And everybody freaks out. That's kind of where all hell breaks loose, basically. And we have like a big fight, because Kim rescues Nick, unties him, and then they have like a big fight, Nick and Kim versus the killer. You remember what happens from there?
So, they're fighting if I'm, and then, Kim, I think, kind of like interjects herself and sees and kind of like looks at the killer.
He's got a ski mask on, but they have a moment where they look eye to eye, and it's enough for her to recognize
him. And it was enough that she knew who that was. And
but before that actually happens, I think she, I forget what she uses, but she hits him. Maybe it's
it looks
the back.
Like the
I
axe.
I think with the axe.
The back, yeah, she uses the back of the axe. I don't think she used the...
She hits him really hard, though, and then it's after that that she recognizes who it is.
Right. And then he starts stumbling away, and I remember they were outside. So, and then the police end up, they're finally there, and they surround the place, and they're about to start, they're, you know, aiming their guns at the killer. But Kim runs outside and tells them not to shoot, and takes off the killer's mask, and it's actually her brother, Alex. Mm-hmm. So it turned out that it was not this, you know, and it was not the janitor, it was not this mental patient rapist. It was Alex, the brother of the girl who had died as a young girl.
How did he find out about this stuff?
Well, they show you him walking up to his sister's dead body. So, like, even though he left initially, he came back and he saw her lying there. And
oh, because he just assumed that that's what killed her, is because he knew who was playing in the hide and seek. Is that why he knew who to target? How did he know who to target?
Well, I mean, not just when, like, he came back with Kim and their father and mother.
Yeah, and they saw
the
dead
actually,
body.
Like, in the beginning of the movie when they all, like, realize that she's died. Mm-hmm. But they show him back there still during the day, like, when she's just fallen. So it kind of, the implication to me was that He was there right after it happened. He came back maybe to play himself and saw her lying there,
and then he knew
that the kid that she had fallen out the window and the kids were responsible, not the rapist.
But yeah. how did he know which kids were playing? Like they only saw the boy outside the roof, right?
I don't know. Maybe they. I just assume he did somehow.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
I didn't know how he put two and two together. I was just curious if they showed it and I wasn't paying attention.
I don't think they did.
Explicit, but it was
no, I don't think so either.
Like, he saw them or he happened to already know who was playing or whatever.
Yeah.
Did you guys think that it was him at that? Like, at
any point? I actually, Stacy was in the room. She doesn't care for horror movies, but she was in the room. And to be honest with you, this isn't necessarily, I don't think it's really like a scary movie that scary. And certainly it wasn't anything that overly bothered her. And I actually turned to her before it was over. I'm like, I think it's the brother. So I did guess this one.
I didn't think any of them were scary.
I didn't either. Like, I thought they were
entertaining. They're entertaining enough, but yeah, they're not what I classify as a scary.
Like
Halloween and Friday the 13th, they had their scary moments. Like, they still do. Like, I scream so much when I saw Friday the 13th and he jumps out of the river when she's, like, just floating in the boat, you know?
These are a little bit more straight. I mean, yeah, it's got a twist, but the twist didn't make it scary. They're a little bit more straightforward in terms of A, B, C, it's just not
slasher,
scary.
Like, prototypical. I mean, when this came out, though, like, I mean, I give it some slack for the pace, because it's from 1980 and films were slower to begin with. But, you know, like, so it's average, though, because, I mean, Halloween is earlier than this, and that still holds up. So it's not necessarily an excuse, but I think that's part of the reason that's slower, and some of the cliches.
But Halloween, the direction, like the timing of Halloween, is still masterful. Like, it's,
yes, it is.
Oh, that's why I just said, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It still holds up because it's more of a, artistic.
Well, it's Carpenter versus whoever did this film.
I was just gonna say. I mean, that goes a long way to what you guys were talking about before in terms of the director. I mean, you have a great. Yeah. Director when it comes to Halloween, so yeah, absolutely. But how about you guys? Did you kind of know who was the? Did you have a feeling you knew who the killer was going to be?
I thought it was Leslie Nielsen up till the point at which, because I almost halfway through, I almost thought I remembered hearing at some point that it was him, and there clearly that was a false memory. But but I realized that I was wrong when she looked when they looked each other in the eyes, and I could also tell from the eyes that it was a younger person. And so it would have to be the brother. But yeah, I was actually, because he disappears, and they even like, it's more of a subtle thing than they did with the janitor, where they're like, their mom is where the heck is your father? And that was one weird thing to me, that they never actually explained where he was, because he disappears, and there was like a subtle thing to say. I'm like, oh, that's... maybe it's him, because, and he just never shows up again at the end of the movie.
Yes, like, because I thought he was like DJing or something.
Well, the last and time
I started to watch, and I noticed that he was no longer behind the stage doing his, you know, doing the DJ thing. And he wasn't showing up anywhere, so I'm like, I bet you anything.
The last time I remember him, he was dancing with his wife or somebody, right?
Oh, you're talking about
yeah, the brother was DJing, which you're right. Yeah. He does disappear, but they don't call attention to it. But
no.
The father, Leslie Nielsen, also disappears, and they do call attention like right near the end, like before the all hell breaks loose, and I think his wife says, who's also there, says something about like, where did your father go?
Yeah, you're right.
So I thought that at least when they revealed it wasn't him, which was what I was thinking, I thought that he would at least show up and be like, you know, oh, I, you know, had to take a dump, or, you know, like, I ran out for some tacos, you know, like he would just show up at the end of the movie, but he never showed up. It's like, oh, well, I don't know. I guess it doesn't matter, but where the hell did he go?
But, I was talking about Alex. Yeah, Alex, he was DJing, and then suddenly I did notice, because I'm like, I wonder if it's going to be him, that he just wasn't there anymore. I'm like, oh, I bet you that's where it's going.
So, but this is directed by Paul Lynch, who isn't really known for a whole lot of other stuff, it looks like. But and interestingly, when it came out back in 1980, it didn't get very good reviews.
No.
They both basically like compared it unfavorably to Halloween and Carrie.
Those are two excellent movies.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
So, Mike, what do you give this on the Netflix scale?
I don't know. I give it probably 3 out of 5, which means I liked it, but
yeah,
it was my personal least favorite. I enjoyed it, and I don't regret not watching it. I think it's an important cult film that I needed to watch. I'd like to watch the second one, because there is a follow-up one.
On the lower end of the three?
No, I just go 3, because 3 to me, Netflix, is I liked it. It's not like I really liked it. I liked it. I was entertained. I like... There's certain parts of it that I really like. Like, I like the overall premise. I think the premise is pretty good, and the way the whole plot went. I like the slick scene, because it had some camp in there that I really liked. I like the vengeful Wendy. I think she did a good job.
She was good.
She was probably the most attractive to me too, I thought.
I agree. But, and what do you say, Chris?
Pretty much the same as Mike.
Yeah.
A 3, because I was entertained by it. I didn't think it was exceptional. It was standard in a lot of ways, but I recognized that there was a lot of cliches that weren't necessarily cliches yet at this point, but like reviewers at the time said, I think you can only give it so much slack because Carrie and Halloween had already come out several years earlier, and those are definitely way better films. So even compared to its contemporaries, it's definitely not as good. So I'd say it's average, but it had enough in it to keep my interest and to be entertaining.
If if I'm able to do half ratings, I probably would give it a 2.5. But if I was forced, if you know, we were actually going on to Netflix and rating this, and I was forced, then I would put in 3 as well. But definitely my least favorite of the three.
You're a more critical assessor of movies, though. I notice. Well,
you know, if I say 2.5, that's like literally right. It's like it was fine.
Yeah, but it's almost like you need that extra fidelity, though.
Yeah,
is what you're saying.
Because, I mean, because I didn't think it was overly enjoyable. It also didn't make me want to turn off the TV. It was just, I mean, honestly, it was just there. It was there. I didn't like really like the other two. I would actually say enjoyed watching. I wouldn't say I enjoyed watching this. It was just fine. It's kind of hard, you know. So that's why I'm saying it would be right down the middle. But you know, if I was forced to pick it up, I wouldn't pick a 2. But it wasn't that I disliked it. So I would pick a 3.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of in the same. Feeling around the same about it.
Yeah. I think so.
So chronologically, which is my chronology is to me what alphabet is to Rob, and I'll oppose that. That would put Mike's movie next, which was from 1983.
Yes.
Only $400,000 budget.
The other one was a Canadian film too, right? I think it was like a really big success for Canada.
Yeah, I think it was filmed and up there.
Yeah. So this movie, man, I watched a lot of movies when I was young, renting the VHSs from a local VHS store. Blockbuster wasn't even around. But I probably watched all of these at some point, but I don't remember any of them. So it's like, this is new to me. This one also has a form of bullying to me. But it's a different form of bullying. It's kind of like bullying by popularity, because you want to do what's right, but somebody convinces you to not do what's right.
Yeah. And one thing you can say from these two films is that if you're ever involved in the accidental death of someone, do not cover it up.
Yeah. Do not cover
just
it up.
Public service announcement. It's just better
well
to go
said.
To the police.
And it's funny because both of those movies also start with a flashback of in the past of something that happened in the past.
Yeah, that's true.
This one I think had like a better like twist. Because when we get to the twist, you really it's a little harder to put two and two together on who it could be. I mean, you think it's one thing, but then you learn that something else happened. At least for me, it was that way. But
it's definitely a little crazier.
There's a doctor. There's an older woman that's been all her life trying to have a baby, and this doctor is trying to help her have this kid that she wanted to have, and that's how the scene opens. And it appears that when they have the child, that the baby dies, and she becomes this cranky old lady who is a sorority house mother. She like runs this house every single year and has these kids, and this year everybody graduates, so they're all kind of deciding, you know, what they're doing. Are they going to grad school? Did they get a job? Are they still aimless and they don't know what they're going to do? But they decide to have a party over the weekend, which they should legitimately be able to do. But the woman wants them out of the house that weekend. And all the other houses let them stay throughout the weekend. They don't kick them out. But you find out that it's the anniversary of the death of her son. And what they do a really good job of, at least I think so, is there's this doctor throughout the whole movie. And this doctor, when I was introduced to him, I was like, okay, this is the doctor that tried to let her have a baby. And he's concerned about her health because It looks like she might have some kind of disease in her brain that's causing her to die. At least that's what I interpreted, is her health is deteriorating and the doctor's concerned. So she goes back to the house. She finds the girls are drinking, they're partying, you know. She tells them, "No, you can't do it." And there's one girl there that's real vengeful, who they introduce her, and she's always shooting guns with her boyfriend, and she's really a good shot.
Vicky.
Vicky, yeah,
Yeah, she's a really good shot, isn't she?
she's a really good shot. A matter of fact, the boyfriend was like, he just showed her the gun, and she's like hitting every single can and thinking that she can
Yep.
hit. But
Better than he is, really. Yes.
she invites him. They usually have sex in their car, and she invites him up to the room on this nice water bed, and they start having sex. And the woman is up there reminiscing about her son, and she hears all this stuff, and then she goes down there with her famous cane. The cane's really important.
Yeah.
It's got like a signature staff at the end of it, and she goes in there and she looks like she's gonna kill him, but she actually pierces the water bed and the water goes all over. And then Vicky's vengeful, like she's just angry. First she didn't reach climax and she was kind of humiliated and her bed was destroyed, so she wants revenge on the house mother and
Mrs. Slater.
Mrs.
Mrs.
Slater, yeah.
Slater. And the next day, I think it's the next day, they have that revenge. They try to scare her, but it's like one of those scary things that goes wrong, like kind of like Rob's movie where they're playing hide and seek and it goes wrong. Somebody's murdered. They accidentally, it's supposed to be blanks, but there's a live bullet in the gun and she shoots the mother and they hide her in the pool and they still continue with the party. And of course, there's always the conscious one. You know, we got to call the police, do this, do that.
It's a pretty nasty pool too. Like they haven't been taking
Oh,
care
yeah,
of it or
real
anything, so it's
gross.
all
Yeah.
full of like they haven't been cleaning it
Yeah,
and
they blame
yeah.
her, like, because she never wanted to clean the pool.
And Katie is the other main girl that you're talking about that has the
Has the conscience.
conscience. This doesn't
Yeah.
want to go along with it, but is overborne by Vicky and the other girls.
Yeah, and so they hide the murder, they leave her in there, and then they have a party, but the party has a lot of scenes where the pool's involved. I like
Yeah.
when they have those frat guys and he's like in his they're all in their underwear and the guy dives into the water and they're like, "Holy crap, the lights are on the pool, they're gonna see the body."
What
And
possesses anyone to dive in that water? I have no idea.
they're
Yeah, they're all in
drunk.
their. I like
They're
how they're all in
drunk.
their tight, tidy whiteies.
Yes.
And the big
Yeah.
guy's like, "This is how I like it. This is how I like a pool."
I wore tidy whities a long part of my life, and then I discovered boxers, and man, I never turned back, I swear.
That was the 80s, Mike.
Yeah, 83, I think most of those guys were wearing tighty
Oh yeah.
whities
Yeah.
in
Tidy whities. And
this movie.
the rest of it, you think it's the house mother that's getting revenge on these girls as they're, you know, they try to hide bodies. They actually find the mother's body and they like carry her into a dumpster and then the police see it and they have to hide the body and they say we're gonna go bury the body and so two of the girls take the body out and then while that's happening a lot of the girls are getting murdered and you don't know who's doing it but the twist of the story is the doctor knows all along that what he was telling her and warning her about was the her son has like this brain defect and
Yeah, so
he's
basically
gonna
the
turn
son didn't
violent.
die.
Yeah, he
He didn't
lived.
die in childbirth like she had been told, right?
So yeah, so the
Well, not in
doctors.
childbirth, but I mean he didn't end up dying, right?
Right. He didn't end up dying, but he knew. It's a good way of filming because they make it sound like it's the woman that has the brain defect.
Yeah.
But it's the son, and he's saying you because of what's happening with his brain, you know, like they show images of the brain. He said he's gonna become violent, and he's trying to warn the mother, but the mother's pr very protective of her son, and she's kept him locked up. in the attic the whole time. And
he has like kind of like seems like he has a regressive personality. Like the even though the impression is that he's older, or well, he obviously would be at this point just from the time that's passed. The room is still very much like, looks like a little boy's room.
Yeah, like an 8-year-old or a 5 to 8-year-old's room. And there's one creepy scene in this where I think, but I'm always scared of like Jack in the Boxes and clowns, but. He's actually dressed like the actual the Jack in the Box, and he's in the room. And I thought that was really well done, because that actually scared me, because that was you think it's like a doll, like this live action doll, and it's
well,
really him.
That's at the very end, yeah.
Right, because they did that well, because they showed that life size doll once earlier. And I think the person even touched her or whatever is just a doll. And then towards the end, you see him start to actually move. So it was a nice callback and kind of a real creepy creepy thing. But, you know, I've got a question for you guys. Maybe I missed something when I was watching this. But at the very beginning, back in the flashback when this woman was in labor, the doctor said that I'm sorry, Mrs. Slater, that the baby had died. So how is it that she's been caring for him up in the attic? Like
I think the baby must have started crying late. Like, you know, you take the baby out and you usually hear, wah! Maybe it lived and they chose not to show it to us, because he knew the kid was alive because he was warning the mother. And
I wasn't sure with that.
The other thing that's really cool about this movie is the doctor is kind of mischievous too, because he's like trying to hide something.
Oh, very
like,
much so.
He's trying to hide his medical profession, like letting him know that this kid's alive and that this.
Well,
because
I think whatever he was doing to try to help her conceive was probably had these side effects that.
It was illegal. The treatments he was giving there were illegal and were responsible for the her son's deformities and mental problems.
Right.
So he was culpable in hiding her son because he didn't want to be ruined by like he basically his practice would have been over. At the very least, if not, if he would not like in legal problems, so.
But what's
that's
interesting
why he went
is
along
he,
with
he's
everything.
Like, it starts off like he's there to help the girl, the last one that's left. And
right.
What he mm-hmm. does is he drugs her and uses her as bait to try to kill the son. It's you talk about ethical. I mean, it got really, really, really strange and. Of course, you have the female lead that survives, and that's the main character.
Yeah, Katie.
Katie's
one, you know. Typically, she's the most moral one, so she's your typical final girl.
Yeah, they have the fight scene. They have the fight scene in the basement, and if I remember correctly, she takes a doll's head off, and it had like a spike, and she stabs him a couple times. And then he falls out of the attic, like out of the attic, because it's open, and he just lands. But if I remember correctly, did they show him afterwards, like the mm-hmm. body's gone or the blinking? I can't remember.
He opened his eyes, I believe.
Yeah, he opened his eyes, and that's.
And then that was the end of the movie. Yeah. So it leaves you to guess what might be might happen next.
Thing I like about these movies, though, is in terms of. Nudity. I'm going to talk about it briefly. Everything is real. Like, there's usually not like fake boobies. and it's cool to see.
I'm glad you approve.
It's just, again, typical. I mean, again, it has to do with when these were made.
Yeah.
So
this one I'd give a 4 out of 5, which I really liked it. I thought it was a good movie.
I think for me it's still a 3 out of 5, but that's where it kind of breaks down. The system kind of breaks down because I liked it more than Prom Night. So it's a higher 3 out of 5 for me.
I'm the same way. It's a 3 out of 5 for me, but it's a very high end 3 out of 5, whereas, the other one was just barely. I mean, it was a 3 out of 5, but it was on the very low end. So I like this one better than
Yeah, and this
Prom.
budget, like we said, was 400K and it made 10.8 million.
It was fun. I mean, it's definitely a fun movie to watch. And I liked the whole thing with Mrs. Slater, and then slowly getting more and more information about that, it was her son and stuff like that. I
Yeah.
enjoyed it.
We had the one sorority girl that was always drunk too. Like she was so gone, like wanting to throw up all the time.
I think this was directed by a guy named Mark Rosmond. He hasn't done, this is what he's most known for. He's worked in television and stuff like that. I thought though that this had a little bit more of noticeable directorial flourishes. There was a nice moment early on in the party where the party's going strong, everybody's happy, but he did a series of close-ups of all the various girls from the sorority
Oh yeah.
and their troubled expressions.
It was like
That
panning
was
across,
nice.
wasn't it?
Yeah,
Yeah, and then it would highlight and then it would kind of stop and
at each
yeah,
of them.
but
So that was nice. And probably the highlight gross moment is one of the sorority girls is killed in a bathroom stall, and then later
Oh my God.
when Katie is basically having her final showdown with the son, she goes back into that bathroom and opens that stall to hide, and the sorority girl's head is sitting in the toilet. So that was pretty nasty.
Yeah, listen.
That was probably the grossest moment of the film, I would say.
The timing on these kills were better too, I thought. Like
I thought so too.
they weren't like overly long. I mean, overly long is okay. Like Texas Chainsaw Massacre does a fantastic job. And is it Toby Ho Hooper? Hopper? Hooper?
Yeah, Hooper,
He
yeah.
does a fantastic and it's a long chase scene. That works and the
Yeah,
timing is
I mean,
right. It
well,
has
you're built up
it
to
has
that.
right, it has nothing to do with length. It has to do with directorial timing and
Yes.
hitting certain beats. And this one hit better beats than the other one did.
Yeah, it's whether you're building suspense or you're just dragging things out.
Right, you because he earned it at that point in Chuck Texas Chainsaw Massacre to have that be much longer because I mean you're just tense the entire time.
Just out of curiosity, I know this is a little bit of a tangent, but did you ever see the movie Ed Gein, which is based
No,
on the
I haven't.
Texas Ch you got to watch that.
Yeah, is it any good?
Well, Ed Gein is the guy that the Texas Chainsaw Massacre was based on.
Oh, I had no
But
idea.
it's more of a realistic approach on it. So if you can find that film, Ed Gein, and you're a Texas Chainsaw Massacre buff, I would definitely watch it.
That's cool.
Yeah, he
Okay.
was
I've heard of
a
it. I didn't know
serial
that
killer.
that's what it was
Yeah,
based.
he's the real serial killer. And he did the flesh stuff too. Like Leatherface, except it's different. He dug up corpses. He
What a creep.
didn't do it with live flesh, yeah.
Yeah, Texas Chainsaw is loosely based
Very, very
on
loosely
him.
based on
Yeah.
it.
The two main actresses in this, Katie, the main good girl, and Vicky, the main bad girl, basically. Catherine McNeil and Eileen Davidson. It looks like they're both known mostly from soap operas, but pretty prominent from them. And looks like Kate McNeil was also in another horror film, which I don't think I've seen, Monkey Shines.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that either. That's the Stephen King one, or no?
No, but
I remember it has. The
I've always associated
with the
it.
Symbols,
yeah,
symbols on the cover. I remember.
Exactly. That's why I've always.
Oh, okay.
It
with, is that what I'm thinking of?
It's got the main poster has got the like little toy monkey with the symbols, and then
yes.
That second, what's it called? The second short story collection of Stephen King had for a while, if it doesn't still had the
same thing,
same monkey on the cover.
That's exactly
so I that's fine because I've always associated the two as well, but they're not actually related. I gotta look up what the name of that collection is now, but
she did appear in Space Cowboys. That was kind of a big film.
Yeah,
that had like a lot of big actors, the older generation actors going into space.
Tommy Lee
Jones?
Yeah,
on.
Tommy Lee Jones, the guy from the Rockford Files. I remember this. It
Skeleton
was Clint Eastwood, Tommy Lee Jones, Donald Sutherland, James Gardner. Yeah.
Skeleton Crew is the name of the Stephen King
Skeleton
selection.
Crew.
And there's a story in it called The Monkey, which is...
Oh,
it's not really a monkey here, Mabel. squirrel.
That's how I read my comics, is how Mabel barks. It's like, squirrel.
Yeah.
Very cool. But yeah, I liked this one. It was enjoyable.
The other one is just a lot of soap operas. Holy moly.
Definitely better paced. Yeah, Vicky, she seems like she's even more well known for her. Her Wikipedia page actually has a photograph, which always tells you that they're more known than other people. But yeah, she seems to be really
Young
solidly,
and the Restless. That's a big one.
She's really solidly connected with a lot of
Santa Barbara, Days of Our Lives, The Bold and the Beautiful. I mean,
wow.
Yeah.
Made it rounds, huh?
Yeah.
But yeah, as you said, yeah, Young and the Restless seems to be the one that she's most known for. She even like left and came back, and
yeah,
is on it currently. Ashley Abbott. I don't know. I don't know anything about soap operas except for the names of them.
I used to watch General Hospital with my grandma. That was the only one. That one had Rick Springfield in it.
Nice.
I had to sit there and watch it, so I learned to watch it back
sure.
in the day.
Just like a good grandson.
Yeah, it was that and the Lawrence Welk show. I will admit, I still do like the Lawrence Welk show. That's my type of music. I love that music.
Oh, I know.
It has a calming effect on me.
Like, go back to when you first experienced it as a young kid.
This movie was actually remade also, but they just it was just called Sorority Row.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think it's fairly, I didn't see this either, but it's fairly different, I think.
No, it's got the cane.
It's a little
for
more,
sure.
It's a little closer, okay.
It's a little closer to the original. Plus, it has the messed up son.
And Carrie Fisher is in it.
Yeah,
oh, really?
I think she's the mother. I think she's the sorority house mother. I can't remember, but I think so.
Isn't that something?
And Bruce Willis and Demi Moore's daughter, isn't it? Yeah, I haven't seen. I tend to go back rather than forward when it comes to horror movies.
Yeah, me too, for the most part.
They're fun to watch, though. Like, if you want to compare, like, this one with the new one.
Yeah.
Like, Prom Night is different.
Yeah, it's usually a little more interesting to compare
this one, I think they had, like, more of a solider, a timely plot. I mean, not timely plot. In other words, a plot that could go forward with. Whereas the other one, maybe it's not so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because kids today, how often do they play hide and seek and stuff? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
They have their iPad. They're playing virtual hide and seek.
Yeah, they'd have to bring in some kind of like internet aspect to it or something.
Yeah.
Or they probably like wouldn't have covered it up because they would have already been like Instagramming when the girl fell out the window and just immediately arrested.
Yeah.
Movie over.
mine had the sexiest poster. I like all the movie posters, but mine had the sexiest.
I assume that that's why you picked the movie in the first place. It's like you saw the poster and like that's the one.
Well, this is actually an awesome artistic, looking poster because it looks like those hard case crime books that Titan puts out.
Yeah,
like the way they draw it, it looks awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, kind of.
All right, so, let's go to our
Chris,
final.
What do you got?
Are you ready to move to 1986?
This one was my favorite.
This one was my favorite too.
I can't tell if I like this one or Mike's better, but it might be this one as well.
So, Chopping Mall. So I was going to say earlier, Mike, when you were saying that you might have seen a lot of these when you were younger. For me, it's really easy for me to recall if I've seen a horror film or not because I was terrified of horror movies when I was a kid and would not go near even like the slightest indication that a movie was scary and did not start watching them until I was an adult. So my recollection is really easily... is a lot easier. But so especially like maybe about 10 years ago or so, I was watching a lot of movies and was in a really like movie phase. And during that time period, I watched a lot of 80s like schlocky horror movies. Some of which, and I remember hearing about Chopping Mall at that time, and it's just one of the ones that I didn't get around to watching, but like some of the other ones, this one's kind of related to some of the ones I did watch. One, it was produced by the Cormans, Roger Corman and his wife at the time. And one of the actresses in it, Barbara Crampton, was in some of the movies I did watch, Reanimator in particular. That's like very similar to this one. Well, I would say Reanimator is better, but it's similar in that it's definitely, of the ones we watched, skews more towards being somewhat comedic or even really comedic, depending
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I think it was, I think there was a lot of comedy.
Yeah, it's horror in terms of being gory, but it's definitely more of a comedy. And it was directed by Jim Wynorski, who went on to basically make a lot of like softcore movies, especially in the 80s.
Deathstalker 2, I give that a thumbs up.
Yeah, I've never seen that. Yeah, like he made a few more like legitimate films. He actually made he actually directed The Return of Swamp Thing.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad film.
Is it?
Well, there's two kids that play in that movie, and they're very good. Like the two kid actors, it's a pretty good follow up. The costume looks way better too. Right, the Swamp Thing too. The other one that he did a sequel to that is one of my favorite movies is Beastmaster. He did Beastmaster too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not of This Earth is pretty well known. I think a couple years after this, it's a remake, but it has Tracy Lords in it. Sorority House Massacre 2.
Who can forget the Bear Wench Project number 3? Right. Mystery Mountain.
That's what I was going to say, but then, like, at some point, you kind of, like, shift. I mean, he made, like, a ton of movies and produced movies, but, yeah, at some point, he shifted over to making, like, in the 90s especially, like, making direct-to-video movies, yeah. Like, that mostly starred, like, Playmates and stuff like that.
And like the Witches of Rustwick and
I want to see the busted co-eds versus the lusty cheerleaders. That's what I want
to
see.
What about the House on Hooter Hill?
Yeah.
There you go.
I love The Hills Have Eyes, but I want to see The Hills Have Thighs. That's gonna be really good. Shark Babes.
There you go.
But yeah, I mean, you look at his list of credits, and it's just like goes on and on and on, like as director and producer and stuff like that. And he's still making movies as of this year. But it's funny, he's actually recently made children's movies. A Dog on Christmas and A Dog on Hollywood, which is like got a telepathic dog in it.
I think the dog is Dog on Christmas is literally just after the Sharkansas Women's Prison Massacre.
Right. So
he's into everything.
Yeah, he's pretty prolific. There's a documentary about him called Papatopoulos.
Really?
About like his career and stuff. So, but anyways, getting back, since we said with the other ones, this one is the latest of.
Sorry, is that on Netflix? The documentary? I want to see this.
I don't know.
I want to watch this. What is the documentary called? Did you say?
Papatopoulos.
Papatopoulos.
That's a strange name.
I think I saw that on Amazon.
It's like one of his joke pseudonym. It's written like it's the last name, but if you say it slowly, it's pop a top. Meaning like take off your top.
Sure.
There you go. So anyways, back when he made this movie though, he was just kind of starting out, and he got Roger Corman and them got him to he got them to let him make a movie, and they, him and his buddy, wrote the story in about a day. And this is definitely like the mid '80s, and this is definitely like one of the most '80s movies I've ever seen. basically, the gimmick is there's this mall that has just put in this new state-of-the-art security system, and what it consists of are these three new robots. So there's a real 80s element. And they, they're set up, basically, they go online when the mall closes, and they have tasers and tranquilizers to take down any thieves that break into the mall. And meanwhile, there's four different couples they work at this furniture store, and they are planning to have this party at the furniture store after this mall closes. Because, you know, super convenient, like, they can hang out, no supervision, and there's a whole bunch of beds, because it's a furniture store.
Sure.
But, of course, things go wrong, and it gets into it pretty quickly. There's basically a lightning hits the mall and damages the computer that controls the robots. And so then the robots go evil, basically. It causes them to be damaged so that they can't really discern between an actual thief and just people that are working in the mall, because you're supposed to be able to show them your ID badge and they're supposed to be able to recognize you. And then it also makes them lethal, like, in terms of how much force. So they start patrolling the mall after they've killed the tech guys that are supposed to be like sitting in the control room and controlling the robots. They killed their tech guy, and they start patrolling the mall. So meanwhile, the couples are partying. two couples that are basically like just guys that three so three there's four guys, three guys work in the furniture store, and then there's a fourth guy who is married, and him and his wife have their own like pickup business, or like
maybe they deliver the furniture.
No, I think they do like roadside assistant kind of thing.
I know, like, she's like an awesome mechanic because they make it a point to show how awesome she is opposed to him.
Yeah, they have like a tow truck and stuff like that they like they help, you know, people have a flat tire and stuff like that. So they show up at the mall and join up with the other couples. The three guys that work at the furniture store, one of them is like the super nerdy one. That doesn't really want to go along with it, and is like wants to, even when things start to escalate, like he's with the party and stuff, he's trying to hide out back, cause, and they're hooking him up with one of the girls, like they're the kind of like the two main characters, because they're the ones that you know, just start Allison and is her name, and he's Ferdy. So they're basically like getting to know each other and watching the watching a movie while the other three couples are getting it on. So the robots are patrolling the it follows the cliche, and basically like the most promiscuous couple are they basically die in order of promiscuity, and also like I noticed that they die in couples. There's no like mismatch where like if one of the a pair of two dies, then the next person to die is the other person in the couple.
Not to interrupt, but did you guys both see It Follows?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I that's one of the reasons why I like that movie. It kind of turned that trope on its head about the, you know, being promiscuous. It's like it encourages you. You have to do that in order to save yourself. And It Follows, which is interesting.
But yeah, that was good. So yeah, basically it starts out that one of the couples, they are having sex, and the girl sends the guy out to get cigarettes. So you got like the old school cigarette machine, the mall and everything. There's a lot of like cool stuff to see from the 80s like that. And so he's the first one to get killed. The robot finds him and kills him. And then she's wondering like, well, what the hell? Like, where is he?
Isn't the first one to get killed the guy that's working there?
Oh, yeah, you're right. I forgot.
They have security guards that kind of, like, run the monitoring of the mall. And they work for the guy that created the robots.
And, right, the technician. I did mention that the technicians get killed.
Yeah, the technician is like, hey, I'm gonna read some porn while I'm on the job. And he gets killed for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I meant the first of the couples, but yeah, there's also janitors that are working, and Dick Miller, who's been in
he's been in a ton of films.
Everything, yeah.
Yeah, that guy's. I was like, I know this guy.
He particularly worked a lot with James Cameron and films that Cameron directed or produced and stuff. Yeah. But he's been in Gremlins. He's been in The Burbs, which we talked about on the show at one point. Tons of different stuff. I like Dick Miller a lot. Usually if he shows up in a film, it's at least halfway decent just from him being in it. And he has like a real bad attitude as far as like dealing with the robot. Like he has no patience for it, and it electrocutes him basically by putting the taser in the mop water that's underneath.
Yeah, I actually like that though, because they would always say, "Can I see your ID?" or something like that. And even when they're doing the demo, they would always show their IDs and they'd be able to get away. And he's like, "Here, fuck you, here's my ID." And the robot just shocks the hell out of him. Have a nice day.
Yeah, that's the like catchphrase of the robots.
Yeah.
Even though they're killing people, they're still
Have
programmed to say, "Have a nice day."
a nice.
And so the girl whose boyfriend just got killed while he was going to get cigarettes, she's wondering what's taking him so long, and so she goes out to try to find him, and you can kind of see Wynorski's future career path and his camera movement here. She's like he's The camera basically follows her ass in her Playboy underwear as she's like walking down through the mall. But probably the most gruesome death. She gets back and she's standing in front of the furniture store, in front of like the glass that comes down when it's closed.
Oh my God, I
And
was shocked when this happened.
yeah, and
I'm like, oh my God.
they so the other couples come up to the glass because she's screaming like she knows her boyfriend has gotten killed and she's trying to get their attention. So they all rush out in time to see the robot come up and just blast, and her entire head just explodes.
My wife was in the room again, and she happened to watch that, and she said the same thing. She's like, "Oh my God!"
It's really, they did a good job of like surprising you with it,
Yeah,
because
because you don't expect that.
nothing that gross or gruesome has happened at that point. And I don't know if, did you guys watch the credits?
No, I didn't.
No, I don't think I did.
Oh, it's
Why?
so it's those style of credits where they show the actor, then it's like a couple seconds of movement and then they freeze frame and then it shows you the actor's name, you know? And when it gets to her, it's that scene, her head explodes and it freeze frames on her severed head. And
Perfect.
that's like what her what and then it shows her the actress's name.
Oh,
I
perfect.
thought that was pretty funny.
That is funny.
So obviously at this point the other three couples are freaking out, and they realize that the robots are trying to kill them, and the men send the girls off to try to escape by going through air ducts and stuff like that, while they go to a sporting goods store and start like arming themselves with guns and stuff, and like a propane tank. And they try to destroy one of the robots by throwing a propane tank at it and shooting it, and they think that they've destroyed it. Because basically they just put it out of commission for a while, and they start to try to set up that there's a big elevator in the middle of the mall, one of those ones that like is in a glass tube you can see around. They start to try to set up a trap for the remaining robots, but as they're going through, Barbara Crampton, like her character Susie. She starts freaking out and insists on going back. She says, you know, she's worried about her boyfriend, and so the girls don't escape. They end up coming back. They arm themselves also. What do they take? I know the one
Oh,
girl out.
they take a flare, and then they take st stuff to try to blow it up with. Like they have those what do you call it? Roadside flares.
Yeah, I know they had the because Allison, the last girl, the final girl, she I thought it was funny, she stuffs a flare down her shirt, like holds it with her bra, but which is like it's clear like during the course of the filming, like everything that happens after that she does, like there's no way she actually kept that flare in her bra like safely the whole time to when she finally uses it at the end of the movie, but whatever. Anyway, that I know that there's like another standoff where Susie and her boyfriend die. She gets then she oh she gets set on fire because they have like gasoline. I don't they like make like Molotov cocktails or try to make Molotov cocktails or something, and then like she gets set on fire in front of everybody and is like rolling around, gets burned to death. Eventually
Yes.
like they decide to try to get to the control center where the robots are are controlled from, and her, Susie's boyfriend Greg, he gets thrown over the railings. He dies by falling. It's a 3-story mall. He falls all the way down and cracks his neck. So at this point, there's 4 people left, like the 2, Allison and Ferdy, that got set up, and the mechanic couple.
Why didn't they ever continue down the air duct path? Why was it so damn hot?
I thought they went back because Susie...
I know she freaked out. She freaked out, but they could have gotten to the garage if they followed the air duct, right? Wasn't that the idea? They'd get to the parking
garage? That was the plan,
garage?
But like, she freaked out and was like, I'm going back either way, so the other girls follow her so she doesn't go back.
They were all sweating up there, so I was like, is the heater on? Like, you wouldn't think the heater would be on at night. You know, usually your electrical stuff, your gas and electrical stuff goes down at night.
Yeah, maybe it was on enough that, I don't know, some of these things.
No, they got really hot. I mean, they made it a point to show they were all sweaty and stuff in there.
They probably just wanted sweaty women, but.
their hands were burning, like, when they're touching it.
I don't know. These are things that I don't contemplate.
No, neither do I.
Just kind of, like, go with the flow on that kind of thing. I find it interesting, the things that occur to you. It's probably the engineer mind.
Well, you know what it is Mike is watching the movie. He's buying into the premise of these robots that have gone haywire, but he still expects people to act logically. Right, Mike?
Well, I would have kept down the air duct, like, even if it was just one of them, like, just to go get help. They could have got, like, external help if they would have gotten to the... Because the robots, I don't think, would have had jurisdiction in the parking garage.
No.
I think they're just inside the mall. Like, anything in
the
mall.
Yeah, because they weren't
even grabs.
Supposed to go into the stores.
No, they weren't, but they broke that rule. So who knows?
Right.
Who knows?
Yeah.
They were so awkwardly built, though. Like, it just seems like you would... It's almost like having that serial killer, like in Halloween, that walks so slow, you know? And you're like, I could get away, and then they end up in front of you. These robots are bulky, and they're not, like, they can't move very fast.
No, they're on, like, treads.
Yeah.
That aren't that fast.
Yeah, it's 80s technology, too, you know?
Yeah.
Nowadays, they would be, like, super sleek. Robots that look like humans, but oh, you know, and one thing, like, speaking of the 80s, I happened to catch at one point obviously they keep a lot of like branded name brands and stuff like that off screen, but you could actually see a bunch of G.I. Joe vehicles like stacked up when
looking for stuff, but I didn't catch that.
Yeah, the camera pans really fast, like, and they're in like it's like a kiosk. That's briefly in the foreground as it pans across, and there's a bunch of G.I. Joe vehicles.
I didn't see it.
Yeah. You can't... It. I just happened to notice it, but it's not on there for very long because they want to obviously avoid paying Hasbro money. But, so yeah, there's 4 people left, 2 couples, the mechanic... couple, they're still alive, but they're in the next to go. They try to do this thing, which is actually kind of clever, thinking that the robots don't, you know, have the ability to discern one way or the other. They hide in amongst a whole bunch of mannequins. And cause them to fire at the mannequins, and their lasers are reflected back at the robots. But Linda, the mechanic woman, she gets killed in the fray, and that ends up setting her boyfriend off. He basically kind of like sacrifices himself. He drives a golf cart into the robot. So he destroys the robot, but he's killed in the crash, the like explosion that happens.
It's the kamikaze move.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm gonna die, but I'm gonna take you out, right?
Yep. So we're down to like the two that didn't have sex, as typical. Allison and Ferdy. And she turns out to be like pretty badass herself. There's a point at which she takes the gun from Ferdy, and is a much better shot, like Vicky and Sorority Row. She's a much better shot than the guy.
Well, even with the paint, I mean, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, so that's like her final thing. Ferdy, she thinks he's dead. Like he gets hit and like damages his skull, and so she and is knocked out, and she thinks he's dead. So she goes into like a paint store and sets up a trap for the robot by she the only thing that was speaking of things that catch your attention, like, because I worked painting houses for a while, like, so it was something that jumped out to me that wouldn't to other people. Or, I mean, even if you just have painted before, not necessarily worked as a job, but I was laughing at the speed at which she was opening the paint cans. I'm like, there's no way that you would open those paint cans that fast. Like, she's just
They're
flipping
hard
open up, like,
to open, man. You
yeah,
need
like, I was like,
a screwdriver, a flathead,
yeah.
and just
Oh, she's
open
like
them.
flipping them. I'm like, you have to go around the whole edge, and but obviously for the sake of the movie, like, she basically in real life she would have died like trying to get the paint cans open. But she
Yeah.
flipped, so, but it was still a clever thing, like clever idea. She flips open all these paint cans, spills the paint, and then she more importantly dumps a whole bunch of paint thinner, and tosses a flare into the store when the into that spot when the robot's there, so it gets stuck in the paint, and then the paint thinner is flammable, and she destroys the robot, and so she's the one that sur she's the one to survive. You think she's the only one, but she's walking out. It turns out that Ferdy didn't die. Amusingly, he's holding a toilet paper roll to the bloody spot on his head. And that's the end. But
This movie was really clever, I thought. I mean, going back to when it came out, and then it had the camp factor, so you can enjoy it today. You know, like
yeah.
I thought it was, for me, I thought it was gonna be a movie. I knew nothing about this movie, and I know cult films. I knew nothing about it, so I didn't even know robots were involved. So like it was like the total surprise of all the movies. Like
Yeah.
I didn't even know what it was gonna be, and it turned out to be a lot of fun.
I you know, it's funny because the more we discuss it now, the more I'm thinking about it in terms of liking it. And yeah, I think this was definitely my favorite of the three.
Yeah, I
Yeah, and
would agree with
I
it.
really want to see this Papatopoulos now thing. I was Googling it as you were talking, and I was like, man, this I really want to see, but I have to, the only place I could see to get it from is from Amazon from a third party for $44, and that's a
Yeah, it's a
lot.
DVD.
Oh wow.
I looked it
Yeah.
up too. Yeah.
Because I was like, if this is on Amazon Prime, I am gonna watch this today. Like I really wanted to see it. I mean, it even has like all those awards on the bottom of the cover, like you know the film festival type awards. And I was like, okay, I want to see this right away.
Yeah.
But it
Yeah,
doesn't
it
look like
used to
it's
be
easily
easier to see.
accessible.
'Cause it used to be easier to see, like back when it came out. I know, or shortly after, I think it was streaming at one point because I almost watched it. I think it was on Netflix for a while. Because yeah, like even though the topic, you think the topic is about a guy that has become known for making like softcore. Yeah, it's supposed to the documentary is supposed to be really interesting. Just like looking at somebody who's made their career that way by making not just the softcore films, but like movies like
Making a
Chopping
fi
Mall, like.
well, the thing about like the exploitation films and stuff like that is they make them for really cheap. Like they would even
Yeah.
go like to places that would let them almost film for free and stuff. And like this movie focuses on making a film in 3 days, so like it has like the Ed
Yeah.
Wood type philosophy and stuff like that, where you have no money, but you have to get from point A to point B, and how do you get there? I find that fascinating how they do that. Like
Yeah.
even the Roger Corman stuff, like I've seen some of his documentaries, like the Fantastic Four one, and it's pretty amazing to watch. But yeah, that taught me. I wouldn't even thought to look at his filmography, so I'm glad you mentioned that. That looks like something that I would like to explore.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. So a couple interesting things about it. The mall that it was filmed at is the Sherman Oaks Galleria, which is the same mall that was in Fast Times at Ridgemont High and Commando.
That I just finished watching Fast Times at Ridgemont High again too. God, I love that movie.
And Kelly Maroney, who plays the final girl, she it was in Fast Times and Night of the Comet.
Ah, Night of the Comet, another great film.
I
Yeah,
just recently watched that one as well.
she plays
Well, some of it, I fell
Samantha.
asleep.
She plays Samantha in Night of the Comet, and she plays Cindy in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And Jim Wynorski said that he cast her because he wanted to date her. And they did go out for a little while, according to him, anyways. But yeah, actually, probably the Tony O'Dell, the guy that her set up date. I knew him from the sitcom Head of the Class.
Oh,
Oh,
nice.
Head of the Class,
That was a
sure.
good. That was a Dr. Johnny Fever, right? He was in that.
Yeah, he played a similar character in Head of the Class. Like he played the nerdy, like
Teacher,
preppy
yeah.
prep or real preppy guy in that. So he's well known from that. He's in Karate Kid too as one of the Cobra Kai.
Oh, really?
But the other, actually, what drew me to this though is like I mentioned, Barbara Crampton. I liked her in Reanimator. Have you guys seen Reanimator?
I haven't, but I know it's a really big
I think I have.
classic.
Yeah, I would recommend it, Mike. It's similar to this in that it's horror comedy and I think it's even better than Chopping Mall. It's very tongue in cheek, like makes you laugh, but it's also like
Yes,
pretty
I've seen it.
gruesome.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Chris. I think it's definitely, I think, better than Chopping Mall. But not that Chopping Mall was bad, but yeah,
No,
Reanimator
it's
is more
just
of a classic. Yeah.
Reanimator is really good. She's also in like a movie called From Beyond, who's by the same director. Yeah, I like her. She's also she's just been like in a lot of stuff. She's kind of like known by people who are into cult movies, and like I think she's still acting, but back in the day when this was made, like she pretty much has been naked in every movie that I've seen her in, so
Oh my.
there's that too.
So what, how important, I mean, not important, but I feel like if you're
How
going to have
important
a
is her to
good,
see her naked in a film, Chris?
not her particularly, but just in horror movies, I feel like it doesn't have to, but I think it's an important element to have some nudity in it.
I don't know about that.
I think you're disgusting, Rob. I really
I
do.
always I always expect I actually think for a slasher film, yeah, maybe. But like for other genres of films, like vampire and stuff like that, I don't think you need it. Vampire definitely should have some.
If there's a female one, maybe. Female vampire. Vampires, it's on Amazon Prime. You could see plenty of nudity there.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I mean, I think like it's definitely like one of the check boxes on for slasher films, especially as far
Yeah.
as the stereotype. I don't think it's necessary. I think if it's a really good film, you don't even notice if there isn't any, you know.
I would agree with you, but I was disappointed when I saw Dracula that Bela Lugosi wasn't naked at all.
Now
I
that's
think
a
I like
classic. That doesn't need it. Fright Night doesn't need it either.
Fright Night has it.
Does it?
Yeah. He's peeking in the window across the
street. Oh, right next door. Yeah. The hooker that he
oh,
gets
yeah.
to the room. That's right.
Yeah.
He does have nudity in that one.
But no, I mean, obviously, it doesn't have to. And what you said, Chris, is right, is if it's a really good movie, it really doesn't make a difference.
I think, I joke about Barbara Crampton, but I think part of the appeal is that I actually, find her entertaining in the films that she's in. Yeah. As an actress, she seems to just, really, get into the role and not, she plays it seriously in the sense that I mean, you don't feel like she's just rolling her eyes and, pissed that she has to be in this, kind of cheesy movie, you know?
Yeah.
I also think, while you were talking about that, it makes me realize I kind of have different standards when it comes to movies. When it comes to older movies, especially the 70s and 80s, I kind of apply a different standard to that. If I watched a movie now, I would kind of expect it to be above the stereotypes or to be aware of the stereotypes and to subvert them. Like you were talking about, it follows as an example, it flips that stereotype on its head of getting killed for having sex.
Yeah.
Whereas movies from the 70s and the 80s, if I watch Chopping Mall, I'm expecting it to be schlocky and probably politically incorrect. And I don't know, maybe I have a double standard or maybe
No, I think that you're thinking of the time frame in which it was made and trying to put yourself in that time frame. Kind of like we talk about with reading comic books too. It's you kind of put yourself in that in that time frame. And I think that you can enjoy whether it's a movie or a comic or whatever a little bit more if you can appreciate when it was actually made.
Yeah, and I think it's context too. I like watching these 70s and 80s films that not only where you have character actors like Dick Miller and stuff like that, that from these days when movies, you could be a movie star and not physically attractive, you know. all these movies that I wasn't old enough to go to the drive-ins and see these, exploitation films and stuff, but I like watching them because there's that sort of lack of Hollywood polish that we have today.
Mm-hmm.
You could have unattractive character actors, you can have things happen that are politically incorrect, and I'm someone that is probably pretty politically correct, and I'm definitely somebody that's very liberal. But I also don't think watching something is endorsing something, you know. So I find movies like this just really entertaining by how ridiculous they are.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense at all.
Sure.
So I would give this a 4 out of 5.
Same here.
Chopping Mall.
I'm still a 3 out of 5.
Just the highest of the three.
It's definitely the highest of the 3 out of 5s.
Face it, Rob, the Netflix rating system just doesn't work for you.
It doesn't.
That's why he does the 10s, but that.
Yeah, out of 10.
Yeah,
and
it is.
Yeah. But I mean, everybody in the world.
But to me,
knows what you think
when
of
you
these
do
movies,
a, when
Rob.
You give something a 6 out of 10, that's a D.
But it's not.
It's 60%.
No,
divide it in half.
Three out of 5.
Uh-huh.
3 out of 5 is right in the middle. Well, I guess it's failing. An F is an F, right?
I mean, 3 out of 5 is right in the middle. Is 2.5.
Yeah.
So that's the same as 5 out of 10.
It's
yeah,
weird.
I mean,
it's weird because going in, I thought I would like Prom Night the best, mm-hmm. and I liked it the least. And I thought I would like Chopping Mall the least, and I liked it the best. So it was a happy surprise.
And I think that it's interesting that all three of us coming in and having our own picks on this, we all have the same order in terms of how we liked the three movies.
Yeah,
I like Chopping Mall because it just it had.
I like the humor in it, to be honest.
Right, yeah. Right. It had the level of camp that I like in that type of film. Like it just had just enough, but it kept a serious pace, but it was sort of campy, and I liked it. That makes a good cult film.
Yes, and it needed to be campy for the type of movie that it was. It made it that much better.
Well, campy makes a good cult film, like, so you want to watch it again. Like, the other two, I don't know if I'd want to watch again. This one I'd probably watch again in the future.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
It shows you the difference of what a difference six years makes, too, because it has that self-awareness. Like, if Chopping Mall had been made in 1980, like, it probably would have been the same as Prom Night because, you know, enough time had passed that there's this self-awareness, so that it's tongue-in-cheek and the comedy in it is intentional, you know, because by 1986, there is already a certain amount of awareness of, like, okay, that's what, like, these movies are always doing, you know, so we're going to poke fun at some of that and... I mean, me too. Like I just Prom Night, I had the awareness of its existence for so long, but I think that it's known just because Jamie Lee Curtis was in it, you know,
mm-hmm.
and shortly after Halloween. But I think, I mean, most important is that I essentially won then.
Yes. Yes.
Because we all liked my pick the best.
That's right. So good job. Your prize will be in the mail.
Thanks.
You're no prize. You won a Marvel no prize.
Yeah. I look forward to my empty box arriving.
But if you're a listener, let us know which one you liked more if you've seen these films. It'd be interesting.
Yeah. If anyone does,
I'd be interesting to see other opinions on which films they liked. I mean, a lot of people when I posted Chopping Mall were favorable.
Oh yeah.
I mean, the most comments.
That's part of the reason why I was the last one to pick my movie, and I was aware that your guys' picks were already slashers, and I thought, well, this is kind of similar, but I just really wanted to pick it because, like I said, I watched a bunch of films like this around that time. That kind of, you have, like, it's almost like the Kevin Bacon game where one leads you to another, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I had watched Reanimator and From Beyond and, like, Chopping Mall kept coming up in, like, the same conversations. And I was like, okay, I'll definitely have to watch that one too. And then never got around to it. And I saw it and I was like, oh, I should pick this.
It was a nice opportunity to pick. Sometimes I find myself not knowing exactly what I want to watch and spending so much time just going through all of the choices.
Yeah.
And this was nice because we each picked something. And so I already knew going in exactly what I was going to watch. It was a nice opportunity to see some movies that I hadn't seen before.
Yeah. I almost, the only other thing I considered picking is that, there were some Giallos on Amazon Prime, which that's like around that same time I was watching a lot of movies. I also watched some of those. That's like they're a name for like Italian movies.
Oh, okay.
From the 70s.
I don't know the word that you're using.
Yeah, I guess Giallo means yellow in Italian, but they ended up calling them these movies Giallos because I don't know, I guess there used to be like cheap novels
mm-hmm.
that had yellow covers, and they were like kind of like pulp books, you know, pulp novels.
Yeah.
And it got applied to movies that were kind of like pulp movies, but it's kind of like, it's basically like the Italian version of exploitation movies. And there was a in the 70s, there were a ton of movies made in Italy. A lot of them are like inspired by American slasher films. Like they're technically like crime movies, but the crime is usually like some kind of killer that's stalking attractive women, and some of them are like really it's funny because like I think the budgets are usually higher and like the production's usually higher than the equivalent American films. So it's kind of interesting to see. So I had watched some of those back in like my movie phase. And
do you have an example of a name that I can, of one of them that I can look up or no?
Yeah, I can. I'm trying to think of which ones are like really well known, but there's a lot of them. A director that made a lot of them was Lucio Fulci.
The one I think I might have seen.
Who you've probably heard of him because he did Zombie 2.
Oh, I've seen Zombie. Did he do that?
No, he did Zombie 2, which is like funny because it's it was marketed as a sequel to Zombie, but it's like not really associated. And they just
Oh, he did the Beyond screenplay.
So, yeah, so like what happened is when they put out Dawn of the Dead in Italy, they titled it Zombie.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he just made a movie called Zombie 2, which I have seen. It's Caribbean, like it's a Caribbean island voodoo zombies. But he also did like a bunch of giallos and which ones have I seen? All the Colors of the Dark. I think I've seen that. Don't Torture a Duckling.
Sounds terrible.
Your Vice is a Locked Room and Only I Have the Key.
that's quite a title.
The Red Queen Kills 7 Times. But all these, like, they're like AKA, like that. It's like AKA Blood Feast, AKA Feast of Flesh. Because, like, when these came out and were brought over to American drive-ins, they always had their names changed several times.
Right, Torso. They probably aren't translating quite well.
Right. Not even translating, just like watching it and like making up their own title and stuff. But there was just tons of these made in the 70s and somewhat the 80s. So I noticed that there were several of those on streaming on Amazon Prime, but I didn't feel like picking a subtitled film.
Mm-hmm.
$5 for an August Moon, a.k.a. 5 bembole per le luna de agosto. that, I think, is literal translation.
Yeah, probably.
But, they're also kind of known for, like, particular actresses, like Italian actresses that they were sex symbols and, like, happened to be in, like, a ton of these films, like Edwidge Fennec,
mm-hmm.
I think is how you say her name.
There's the other one. I'm just looking it up. Dario Argento.
Yeah.
He had quite a few horror movies.
Really well known.
Yeah,
he's probably, you're right. Like, actually, he's probably the biggest name. He's
I've seen a couple of his. I'm looking up like Suspiria and Demons. I've seen those two.
Yeah. Like he's got some that like he kind of like is well known because he broke out of the mold of like some of his earlier movies. I haven't seen these, but like you can almost tell from the titles, like The Cat of Nine Tails, Four Flies on Grey Velvet. Like those are like more giallos, and then like Suspiria is really well known. I've seen that. Those like kind of move into more of like they don't really consider them giallos because they like break out of the tropes that define those and are more like suspense and stuff like that. But yeah, he's Asia Argento, the actress's father.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, you're right. He's probably like the best known to be associated. Mario Bava is another. I think I kind of had it backwards. Like, I think these kind of inspired slashers rather than vice versa. Mm.
Okay.
But Mario Bava is another director that has done like a lot of stuff, and like Bay of Blood is one that he did that like inspired Friday the 13th and stuff. So I don't know. Yeah. Anyways, that's a tangent there. Yeah, Mario Bava. He's the director of Five Dells for an August Moon. I just love those titles.
I don't know.
They sound nothing like horror films. That's kind of like one of the things I kind of like. Black Belly of the Tarantula. Just, I don't know. The Devil Has Seven Faces. Jack the Ripper of London, a.k.a. Seven Corpses for Scotland Yard. The Night Evelyn Came Out of the Grave. That sounds like a horror film, but a lot of times the titles are longer than you would normally get. But yeah, Your Vice is a locked room, and Only I Have the Key is probably the best of like the long titles, like Il tuo visio e una stanza chiusa e solo io ne ho la chiave.
Gotta love it.
It's the Italian.
That's awesome.
It's the Italian title. But yeah, they would shorten them sometimes. Like I said, Torso is one that's pretty well known. But the Italian title is I corpi presentano trece di violenza carnale. So a literal translation would be the bodies show traces of carnal violence.
Oh my goodness.
But they decided to just call it Torso.
Close enough.
So that one they shortened.
Yeah, a little bit.
So I don't know. I can't recommend a particular one, but yeah. But giallos, if you don't mind subtitles, that's an interesting subgenre to look into.
Hmm. Well, very interesting.
As an aside.
Yeah.
Hey, Rob, did you finish Bates Motel?
I did.
Oh, man. I stopped watching it around Marion, and then I rewatched Psycho, and it's pretty freaking amazing. I mean,
it's
how
good,
they,
isn't it?
Well, they season 5 and Marion, they take like lines right out of Psycho.
Yeah.
Like, right. I mean, they're verbatim. And there's like one scene in there that it's a totally different scene, but when Anthony Perkins is like chewing on candy and he's looking over the registry. He does that, the new actor does that, and he does it exact, like he nails it. And they do exact camera work. It's freaking
I'm telling
amazing.
You, Mike, when I started watching this series, and it went from, this is just my opinion, but the beginning, like season 1 and 2, probably, like it just went from almost like a guilty pleasure type show for me to all of a sudden it got better. I'm not saying it was bad before. It was good, but it got better and better and better till like the last two seasons. It was like something that was like.
Well, that's because
it's more familiar,
right? The first two seasons are kind of establishing.
Well, yeah,
you still have doubt. Like you still have. There's still the question of like what's really happening and this is that, even though you know the outcome, you know what
I mean? Well, yeah, and it's set in the present rather than, you know, back in the 60s. And it might have taken me a little bit to get used to that with the cell phones and everything. And I'm like, oh, this is where I thought it was going to go. But it just, to me, it went from being a well-made show to really just a fantastic. I mean, the acting.
Genius level.
Yes.
Like show.
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely fantastic.
The writers that put this together and the creators really, really understood Psycho. Like they hyper-analyzed every single clip and every single thing that was said in that movie.
They made
5 seasons worth. It's masterful. It's freaking amazing.
That's the word for it. Did you finish the whole thing or no?
No, yesterday I was like, okay, I'm at the point where Psycho happens, right? And I have to watch Psycho before I watch Marion, because that Marion is when how Psycho starts. You know, she steals the money from her boss and then goes. And I've seen Psycho maybe like, I don't know, 12 times. And I love the movie. Like I think it transcends film. Like it's one of those things that every shot like is just like perfect. It makes me want to read the book. Because
I know that
guy does some of those hard case crime novels that they're re-releasing, you know, the guy who wrote the book. And they have that movie called Hitchcock, which is pretty amazing film itself. But
I kind of wish that I was that I had watched it, the Psycho, for the very first time in more of a vacuum, in that at the time that it was released, like these people going in the theater think that the main star is Janet Leigh.
Yeah.
And the fact that she dies halfway through the movie, what shocked everyone watching the show, I already went in knowing that, you know, that Anthony Perkins is a killer, or rather, is he the killer or is it his mom? Like, I didn't know that going in as a kid, but I knew that Janet Leigh died. So I would have even liked it even, like, it would have been so shocking to see it when it, like, first came into the theater.
My mom saw it when she was young at the theater, and she almost couldn't take a shower afterwards. Like, she was absolutely that terrified.
Yeah.
Like, just to see that film. And you talk about, like, films that don't need to show nudity, like, this one really doesn't. It implies everything. Through shot. Like, you know he's a peeping Tom. He has that hole in the wall, but you never see it. Do you know what I mean? You don't need to see it. The horror is in what you don't see. And when I saw Marion, like, I you don't know how glad I was to watch Psycho before I saw that episode. Because they flipped it on its ass.
And see, that's what I didn't want to get into. I don't want to say exactly
what it is, because Chris, you need to watch this. This show is freaking amazing. But
yeah, I was gonna say I've seen the first season, but you guys are making me want to get back to it for sure.
Oh my god, it flips it on its ass. Oh god, it's like. And then they have that crazy old dude that, what is his name, Barb? Chick. Oh my Chick, god. Yeah. And he's there writing with the typewriter. I'm like, oh shit. Like I you can see what's going on. And oh man, the pieces of the puzzle have just been phenomenal. The actress that plays his mom is freaking outstanding.
Vera Farmiga.
And I follow this actor into The Good Doctor, and I love him in that show. Like, I love him in that show.
Yeah, best joke is from Bill Bomer with his when you were tweeting about it, and I was replying, and then Bill came in. He's got the knife skills.
Well, it's very strange because he plays sort of a similar – well, some of the mannerisms are similar in The Good Doctor, but he's a totally different
character. Like socially awkward type thing.
He's got that socially awkward stuff. And the way he stares off in the distance, like in both of them, because he's autistic in The Good Doctor, and I love the scenes, how they film it, and Chick. Like, Chick's in the room, and he's talking to him freaking self. and Chick acts like they're both there. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's fucking insane. Yeah,
he doesn't want to be killed on the spot.
Yeah, the camera will pan out and you like see stuff and you're like, holy crap. You're like, this guy. you know what, Rob? We're talking about scary. That's terrifying shit.
Yeah.
I mean, that is scary shit when you think about it, man.
Chris, if you have the opportunity at some point, I mean, obviously you're talking four full seasons, but you know they're shorter seasons because it was AMC. But
yeah,
if you have the opportunity, you should definitely give yourself a chance to watch those.
And do what I did. Do what I did. Stop right where Psycho, and you watch Psycho. Watch it. You have to get the magic of that episode. You won't believe it.
I couldn't stop talking about this show from season 4 and season 5 all the way through. And I'm telling people at work that watch a lot of the same type of shows, but weren't necessarily watching this. I'm like, I just have to get this off my chest. It was just so good. It was so good.
Yeah,
so
it's amazing.
Definitely try to watch it, Chris, if you're able to. It was good.
Yeah, I mean, I know you guys are saying it gets better, but I did like what I saw of it.
Oh, it was good. It was real good the way it started. I mean, it's just a different. It's a different tone.
Yeah, it puts it over the top for me from being just a good show to like one of the just phenomenal. Like the way that they wrapped up the last two seasons, it was just I couldn't have asked for more. I guess is what I'm saying.
Cool. Yeah, like it went to pick up even better than you thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Just so good.
That's cool.
Yeah. So what do you think, guys? Should we wrap this up?
Yeah, my stomach's growling. I'm ready for lunch.
Yeah, I'll probably grab something too.
I'll release this today, probably tonight.
Oh, cool. For Halloween.
Yeah, I wanted to get it out before Halloween started, so.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's cool.
God, that show is amazing. I mean, props to the writers for... Oh, man. I haven't even finished watching it yet, and I'm
speechless. How many more do you have left?
I'm speechless. You know, I think we need 5 more.
Okay, yeah. Are you gonna go through them? You're going to be watching them straight through? You think you're going to take a break?
I think I'm going to watch another one tonight.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see how you ended up liking it when you're done.
Yeah, because there's still a lot of plot threads that are happening that need resolution.
Yep, for sure.
So it's like, oh man, that kid's a good actor.
He is.
No one gets excited about something like Mike gets excited about something.
No. But, that's why it's so much fun to listen to Mike's podcasts. Because he gets excited.
That's one of the things I love about you, brother.
Yep, absolutely, Mike.
I just got wired when I watched it yesterday. And luckily, TMC, when you have DirecTV and then you could go on demand, I typed in Psycho and they had it, so I was able to like stream it back, and I was like, yes, I didn't have to pay for it. So
it's been a long time since I've seen that.
If you get a chance, Rob, and you can watch Psycho and then go rewatch the Marion episode, I mean, you will just be blown away. You will feel the magic and how they reuse stuff, it's just amazing.
Okay.
What a magical show. But you've been listening to the Geek Brunch Retrocast, the Halloween Spectacular, and you can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com, on the Twitter, at MythMakingETC, at Rob Krieger, at Mike Myers Brunch, and... on Facebook, we're Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button. You could follow the threads there. And check out some of these films. And if you have seen any of them, let us know what your thoughts are. And,
For sure.
Yeah, because I'm curious what you thought, especially if you've seen them all, which ones were your favorites.
I think Chris Campbell said he already watched two of them recently. He's almost part.
He was one of the ones that said he liked Chopping Mall. So he was like, yeah. So thanks for, and then Chris, next episode is your choice.
I started thinking about it, and so I'll try to get it to you guys sooner than later. So you have some time.
Okay. All right, well, thanks a lot, guys, and enjoy your lunch.
Yes.
All right.
Thanks, guys. Hey, happy Halloween, everyone.
Yeah, happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Welcome to Fright Night for real. All right, bye.
Bye.
Bye.